Today, I've been looking forward to this. As Pastor Jack said, it's been a little bit of planning in advance, so I thought I might be here in the summer, then I was supposed to be here in August, and on that Sunday, about a week and a half before then, we realized that was going to be the Sunday that we needed to work out for my two oldest kids to get baptized. So long story, but we have family all over the place, and miraculously, it worked for them all to converge on that weekend, and I had the privilege of being able to baptize my two girls that day, which was really, really, really special. So thank you, Pastor Jack, for your graciousness and switching with me and allowing me to come this weekend. And God in his sovereignty knew this was the best weekend as well. And so I'm glad to be here. I played football many years ago at Lincoln High School. And so one of the blessings of the timing being different was they were playing a football game on Friday night. I don't know if any of you were there. It was miserable out. It gave me a lot of empathy for those who came to watch games in October and November. When I played, I'm not sure I would have come, but it was raining when I came up, and I thought, if it's raining when I'm there, I am not going. I didn't like playing in the rain. I'm certainly not going to go sit playing in the rain, but it cleared up enough that I could see part of a game, which was kind of fun to reminisce on those days as well. And they were playing our arch rival. When I was playing, was DC Everest. I don't know if they're rivals anymore, if they have a new rival, but man, that was the team I don't think you're allowed to say hate in church, but we did not like very much and wanted to beat every year. So it was fun to watch Rapids beat them on Friday night, but a real privilege more to be here today. And looking out, I know there are a lot of faces that I don't know. 17 years ago since I left and have been a part of this church, and yet this church still holds an incredibly dear place in my heart. I was here during my formative years of growing up in my spiritual development from about third grade till I graduated high school. And so those were meaningful years. It's great to see Pastor John here today. His influence on my life, many others, Dean Heidi Hartman, folks I went to youth group with and school. And so to be back, it's really fun to be here. I now live outside of Chicago, the western suburbs. It's really about as far as you can be from Chicago and still say you live outside of Chicago. We live in like cornfields and farmland, essentially, on the far west side. And I have a picture of my family. They were here at the first service. I think they've taken off to get ready for the Packer game today. So, to get some naps and things. But these are it's my wife, Sarah. And then we have Summer, Sienna, Shiloh, Scarlett, Judah, and Jacob. First four are girls, last two are boys. Very blessed to have them in my life. And those of you who knew me in those early days, and many have prayed that I would have a child similar to me, unruly, disobedient, a type A, a lot of trouble. Well, that little guy in the green shirt is exactly like me. So your prayers have been answered. And Jacob keeps me young or old or something in between as well. But we're very, very, very blessed. And so I know many of you don't know me, but some of you had been praying for me over the last couple of years. It was 3 years ago this month that I first went to the doctor after having several years of some abdominal issues and probably should have gone in much earlier than that. My wife finally made me, and I listened this time and went in, and that led us on a discovery of finding a tumor in my digestive tract that ended up being cancerous, and it was a real surprise to us and our family, early 30s, finding out you have cancer, no history of cancer, and either side of our family led us on a very unexpected journey. At that time, I remember I went in for my first colonoscopy, which I was way too young to have a colonoscopy at that time and have had way too many since that time. But I went in for the first one about 5 days after Jacob, our now two, almost three-year-old, was born. So my wife had some complications leading up to that pregnancy, had complications after it. I'm going in for a colonoscopy. It's just kind of a crazy time. They find this mass. It's larger than I think should have been there and ends up being cancer. And it was just a tumultuous time. A time of real questioning, a lot of questions, very few answers, a lot of dependency upon the Lord. But that set us on a path where we decided instead of doing chemo, we decided to fight it nutritionally and do some natural stuff, a wellness center, radical lifestyle change, a diet change is just significant. Somebody said, you know, I ate like grass and roots for about 6 months, and that's what it felt like. And it still feels like that at times, but committed to trying to do what we can to not just treat the symptom of cancer, but get to the real problem that my body wasn't functioning well. But I'm doing really well as far as I know. at least until the next colonoscopy comes around. Appreciate your prayers for that. Sarah's had her own health struggles as well. And so it's just been an interesting journey for us. But God has been so faithful and so good. And so much of that is because so many people have prayed for us. And one of the advantages we've had of being in multiple places, multiple states, is having a real army of people praying for us. And I can't thank you enough to those who know us and know us from the past. And of course, I bring greetings from my parents as well. Well, fast forward that to about a year ago this month, and through that journey, God had been working on Sarah and my heart. I was serving in a church down in Chicago. I'd been in a church in Philadelphia before that and in Grand Rapids before that, and God was doing a lot of good things. Fruitful Ministry was a part of a larger church that had multiple campuses and was overseeing one of the campuses near where we lived and just seeing huge growth and God just doing some wonderful stuff, but we just began to sense he had something else for us. That's tricky when you're a pastor at a church and you're feeling like God has a different church for you to attend and a different something for you to do. You can't go attend another church and stay a pastor, but that's your livelihood, and I had six kids, and so I was responsible for them as well, and yet knew God had something for us, and Sarah and I were aligned in that. We were on the same page, felt so strongly in the months leading up to. We had known for a while that God, for a lot of details don't matter, that God was calling us away from that church and that the fit, both from a church standpoint and a role standpoint, weren't what was best. I began to feel a little bit like a round peg in a square hole, and we're a little bit out of alignment. And you can drive a car out of alignment for a while, at least I've heard. I know very little about cars, but apparently you can. But eventually, it's gonna start to impact. It's going to wear the tires out. It's going to have damage. And I was getting to that place of going, I don't want to step away and transition and move on when it's too late. Things have gotten so bad. I want to leave well. I want to end well. And God honored the request of our heart for that we could transition well out of there and the next person come in. And it was very, very healthy. But it got interesting. The night before I was going in to share with our leadership that I felt God calling me to step out in faith, and I really felt a lot of what Peter feels when he's standing in the boat and Jesus is saying, hey, you know, come on out, step out. And he's thinking, okay, should I not? What is it? God had not revealed to Sarah and me what he had for us next. What he was telling us was, trust me. And I remember the statement that I heard over and over again in my heart is, do I trust God? Now, I'd grown up knowing Jesus, being converted, having periods of my life. I look at some of you who are my WANA leaders and youth group leaders and pastors and friends. I knew Jesus. It wasn't a matter of my salvation experience. It was just, did I trust his sovereignty? I told and shepherded people through that all the time and encouraged it. Hey, trust God, but was I willing to trust him without the next step? I've always been fairly type A. I hope I'm a little less type A than I used to be. Fairly goal-oriented and what's next, and I'm moving and I'm going. And God was telling me to do something that just didn't fit my paradigm. I didn't really have a box for this. And found God's not really one to be fit in a box either. And he was wanting me to trust him without knowing what the next step is. And a little preview, I still don't know what that next step is. A year later, I'm still waiting. And that's part of why the passage I chose today is so significant to me, but I also believe in your season of waiting as a church and knowing that God has you in seasons of waiting yourself, that you're waiting as well. But backing up just a minute, because I think this helps in part of the story too, is the night before I'm going in to share this, my wife's in Michigan. You know, we labored through this, had a few things we thought we might make a few dollars in the interim and give us some time. And she calls and says, hey, I'm pregnant. And my first thought was, who's the father? Because I'm thinking, we did not plan for this. I mean, I know how kids come. I know how our others came about. I'm well aware it's not, but it was not part of the plan of we're leaving. We're going to branch out, live on savings for a while, explore some stuff. Not the best time for a child, right, humanly speaking. And so that was a bit of a surprise. And, well, what is this? Should we still follow through this? Is this God saying, hey, you made a really wrong decision? You didn't hear me? And we just continue to feel so together and in unity that God was calling us to do this. He had a plan. He'd work that out. Well, I mentioned I have six kids, not seven. So in our second trimester, my wife had several miscarriages before that. She miscarried at about 15 weeks, ended up hemorrhaging in the hospital. We thought we were going to lose her there for a little while. going, what is going on? Like, I'm trying to follow you, Lord. You have this. You give us this miraculous baby we hadn't planned on. Now you've taken it away. And Sarah really, her health was deeply impacted through that. We hadn't told the church yet. So we're about to tell the church we're leaving. And I mean, that's a painful process, as you know, too. And I don't know what I'm going to do. Right? And I still have six kids. Still have to provide for them. Still a man who's very wrapped up in an identity of what I do and how to provide. And I know you can relate with that. I'm not alone in my circumstances going, what now, God? And that's really, I'd love to say in some way there's been some resolution that I'm still there. And so I come today to open up the scripture still feeling very much like I'm waiting on the Lord. And I don't know what God has. We're finding a way to string some things together and exploring some stuff and doing some ministry and the flexibility to come a weekend here and to do some other things that I won't get into this morning, but we're just waiting on him. We don't know what he has, whether it's full-time ministry, whether it's in the secular world. We're having opportunities to share the gospel and to minister and through some creative, flexible, freeing ways right now. And we're trusting him, but we're waiting. And I have way more questions than I have answers. So I don't want you to hear in any way this is a nice, neatly tied up story. And hey, here's what happened, here's what then happened, and then here's what God has done. Now, this is very much me being in the journey with you, knowing that you as a church are also in a season of waiting. You're also watching what God is doing from a leadership standpoint. There's a corporate piece to this. It's been a church that's been a solid, godly church in this area for a long time. I've been blessed to be a part of it and will continue to be that. But the future's a little uncertain of who God's going to bring to be able to lead you forward. And so I know you're praying for that and you're waiting on the Lord in the same way that I'm waiting for God and my family. And I know that there are individuals in here too that are in seasons of significant periods of waiting. And I don't know what those are. I don't know each of your stories. And it could be some of you that are younger in middle school and high school or college, young adult or different seasons. I've talked to some from the first service sharing their stories as well of what God is doing. And that's encouraged my heart. But I know that we're waiting on God in some way. And I don't know how you are waiting. I'm generally not an overly patient person. It's not one of the fruits of the spirits that I have really developed or that God has blessed me with. But God has been growing that in me through this process. And I am thankful for the journey that he's had me on. I'm thankful for my cancer. I'm thankful for my physical struggles. I'm thankful for my wife's struggles. I'm thankful for our transitions. I couldn't say that always in the moment, but I can now. And I still struggle. I mentioned to Jack this morning as we were talking, I said, I wouldn't say equal parts, but I feel parts panic and parts peace in this process. And I can imagine you can relate with that. There are more peace than panic. I feel very much at peace that God has led and directed, and he is the one continuing to lead and direct in this journey. Without question, I am growing in my trust of his sovereignty and his grace. But I'm a man who has six kids, who needs to provide and wants to do something, wants to be used, that at moments has panic of what have I done, right? What am I doing? How is this going to play out? And yet I found some real joy and contentment in the midst of the journey. And as a person who often wants to see what the destination is, I have found great joy in enjoying the journey. And for the first time, I'm learning to slow down a little bit, listen. I'm more present in my marriage, more present with my children. We homeschool our children. I do a lot of that now. And so we're experiencing a whole different way of understanding what my wife for 13 years has experienced. So God is just teaching me a lot, and I know he has a lot more to teach me. And I don't know, how are you waiting? You know, last time you were in a traffic, how'd that work out for you? In a traffic jam, waiting just for your cell phone to charge, standing in the supermarket, knowing you picked the wrong line, you'd looked at all three and had this whole plan, you still picked the wrong one, and now you're waiting for that. You know, waiting for Christmas morning, waiting for whatever it may be, we struggle to wait. That's not just a me issue, that's an us issue, and that's a corporate issue as well. It can lead to fear and anxiety, trepidation, expectation, stress. It can cause and incite all kinds of feelings in us because we want our comfort and we want things to be worked out. I know I do. And letting go of control and waiting on the Lord and his timing is not easy, but it's a beautiful place and it's a wonderful place to be. And as I search scripture and I understand the heart of God, what I begin to understand is our God is often, most of the time, is not in a hurry. He's very purposeful and he's very deliberate. And he doesn't make mistakes. We as humans are often very much in a hurry, trying to figure out what it is. If I just get to the next thing. I know for me growing up, it's like, I just can't wait to get through middle school. I can't wait to get to high school. I can't wait to graduate. Get the first job. Can't wait to get married. Can't wait to have a kid. And those things start coming, right? And you go, what for? What's the hurry? It goes by so quick. I know that we all have seasons of waiting. Every one of us. Stages. You're either in one, you're coming out of one, you're going into one. There's some place of that. Again, we know as a church, there's a season of waiting. And Psalm 27 has brought great comfort to my heart in this process, and I trust that it can bring comfort to you today. I just want to read the passage, and I just want to make a few brief comments of what David was experiencing and what we can learn from him, and then I'll be done. So Psalm 27 reads, "The Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? The Lord is the stronghold of my life, of whom shall I be afraid? When evildoers assail me to eat up my flesh, my adversaries and foes, it is they who stumble and fall. Though an army encamp against me, my heart shall not fear. Though war arise against me, yet I will be confident. One thing I have asked of the Lord that I will seek after, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, to gaze upon the beauty of the Lord and to inquire in his temple. For he will hide me in the shelter in the day of trouble. He will conceal me under the cover of his tent. He will lift me high upon a rock. And now my head shall be lifted up above my enemies and all around, and I will offer in his tent sacrifices with shouts of joy. I will sing and make melody to the Lord. Hear, O Lord, when I cry aloud, be gracious to me and answer me. You have said, seek my face. My heart says to you, your face, Lord, do I seek. Hide not your face from me. Turn not your servant away in anger. O you who have been my help, cast me not off. Forsake me not, O God of my salvation. For my father and my mother have forsaken me, but the Lord will take me in. Teach me your way, O Lord, and lead me on a level path because of my enemies. Give me not up to the will of my adversaries, for false witnesses have risen against me, and they breathe out violence. I believe that I shall look upon the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. Wait for the Lord, be strong, and let your heart take courage. Wait for the Lord." Those last couple of verses in particular have been impactful to me. I remember several months ago, somebody called me on the phone, didn't know them very well. She said, "I was painting my house today." And said, "I just felt like the Lord gave me a word for you today." I'm always a little like, "Oh, okay, what does that mean? Like, what word has he given you?" And she read those two verses. And I went, "Oh, actually, you're right, that is from the Lord. That's a passage that my wife and I have been meditating on and memorizing and committing for a long time because we knew that's the season we're in." Now, David wrote this passage, and we're not exactly sure what season of his life. Like many of his psalms, it's a little hard to tell where or when he wrote that. He was often being chased and assailed by his enemies and sought to be devoured by others or in different physical and spiritual struggles. So we don't know exactly when this was, but David had experience waiting on the Lord, didn't he? From a little guy to a shepherd, to fighting Goliath, to being chased by Saul and his armies, to being king, to dealing with his own dysfunctional family, and waiting on the Lord through his own sinful tendencies and mistakes that he had made, in ways he had erred. He had waited on the Lord, and he had seen the goodness of the Lord. So this was personal to David, and I feel like it's very personal to me, and hopefully to us here today. And if you hear nothing from me today, then this, here's the big idea, here's the thing. Is that our God uses seasons of waiting for his good and for his glory. He doesn't do them by accident. They're not meant as punishment, generally. They are meant for our good. They are meant to chisel us, to transform our character, to make us more like him. They are gifts, and I'm learning that. At times, it's a gift I want to give back, but it's a gift that God gives us as part of his grace. And so we can, with confidence, wait on him in those seasons, believing that he is trustworthy, he is good, and he is sovereign. And I believe that David felt that and experienced that. So just four things that I see briefly in this passage. The first one we see in the first three verses is that David in Psalm 27 had a confidence in God and in God's promises. And both of those are important. You see, right away, David declares, "You are my light and my salvation. You are my stronghold. You will protect me. I am confident of this." And this was so much more than physical protection. Although David certainly was appealing to God for his physical protection and was frequently under duress and under attack by others. But that's so much deeper. It's about his spiritual condition. He recognized that God had, he had a proven confidence in God. David had experienced this from a young man to fighting his foes, to being in some pretty significantly dangerous experiences, to experiencing the heights of being a king, to the depths of deep adulterous sin and murder. He had seen God be good to him and trustworthy in the midst of that all. I've seen that in my life as well. I've experienced, even in the midst of my sinfulness, a faithful God who has loved me right where I was, not waiting for me to get it all figured out and all cleaned up, to love me and shower me with his grace, but he was my salvation, both in a big picture, my salvation of needing Jesus to forgive my sins so that I could experience a new life and life abundant and free and eternal with him, but also in a sense of protecting me, a salvation that helps me in my day-to-day life experience his love and his mercy and to be the one that provides my comfort and my help. He's proven himself. He proved himself to David. He's proven himself to us here today, even as a church. God has been faithful to this body of believers for many, many years. You've seen much good come from this body. He will continue to prove his faithfulness. He has been faithful, will be faithful. He's also a God in his, why we can have confidence in him and confidence in his promises of salvation and redemption is because he's a God of redemption. We can have confidence in God's redeeming power. And I've so appreciated this in my own life. I look back at my life and I think of all the ways that I have stumbled and fallen. Some unintentionally, many intentionally, where I have sinned against God and against others, and a faithful God who has rescued me from myself. And David knew that. David had lived that. David had sinned with the best of them, right? A man who should have known better, volitionally making decisions that destroyed not whole families, but a country as well. I may not have done it on that level, but I have sinned against my wife and my children and people I've loved and against my God, and had a God who has proven himself to me to be faithful, and a confidence in a God who has loved me again and again and again. And same with his church. He's faithful, he has been, he is, and he will continue to be moving forward. Second thing we see here is that David had a desire for God's presence. And I really appreciate this when we see this specifically in verses 4 through 6 there, is that David's greatest desire, he says, I want to dwell with you all my days. I want to gaze upon your beauty. David knew that the greatest place for him was in the presence of God. The most secure, safe, fulfilling, most contented place he could be was in God's presence. And I have to admit that that's not always how I feel. Maybe you're different than me, but I'm not always actively seeking God's presence. Sometimes I'm trying to do it on my own. I'm trying to figure things out by myself, not trying to just sit at God's feet. I'm a doer. And part of why I believe that God has had me on the journey he's had me personally was because he wanted me to stop. Stop doing and start being in his presence. A number of years ago, I read a book called God is the Gospel by John Piper, and he made a statement in there. He said, I'm concerned that many Christians would be okay going to heaven even if Jesus wasn't there. I'm thinking, wow, that's crazy. The point was, many of us are wrapped up into all the blessings, the mansions, the streets of gold, whatever it is we envision or some of what scripture tells us, we can't wait for all that stuff, right? Our circumstances. And some of those are fine. Those are good things, free of cancer, physical ailments, emotional distress. But the greatest prize is what? Or who? It's Jesus. It's his presence. The greatest is we will be in his presence with him. And the closer I get to that and the things I go, the more precious and special that is to me. It's these things in life are fading. I want more of Jesus. I want to be in his presence. And David got that. I mean, Jesus hadn't come yet. He understood that there was a coming Messiah, but he had a confidence in God and a desire to be in his presence. And so he spent time with the Lord. As you're going through transitions or in seasons of waiting, are you desiring God's presence? Are you longing and seeking to be with him? Not just, God, where are you going to lead me? What are you going to give me? What's next? But sitting at his feet, I know that God has done a huge part of this in my life so that I would sit at his feet and listen. Allow areas of sin and depravity that have been pushed down and buried for a long time, always been there, but kind of hidden, to come through when many other things in my life have been stripped away. And to go, oh, I need to deal with that. That impatience, that anger, that pride, whatever it may be, that covetousness, you need to deal with that stuff first and to be in my presence. And only being in his presence does that. I see four things in this passage of blessings that can come. There are many more than this, but four that stick out right here. I kept them all P's for simplicity's sake again. Permanence. David wanted to dwell all of his days, both now and forever, in God's presence. There's a permanence when we find ourselves in the presence of God. It's permanent, both now and in forever, all of my days. There's also a protection, both physically and spiritually. God will protect us. God has protected me in the midst of my journey. He's protected you as a church. But God, it goes far beyond our physical protection, my spiritual protection. I want to be protected from those things that are going to cause me to stumble and fall. Not just the things that, you know, the enemies that may cause me physical duress. I want to be careful and be aware and be protected of the things that are going to cause my heart to be compromised. Cause me to put my faith, trust, and hope in things that will not satisfy like only Jesus can. Third thing I see there is position. Is that as believers, we know that we will be raised up and exalted with Christ. That's a promise we have. We can have confidence in that, is no matter what we're going through or where we feel our state in life is right now, that one day we will be fully, more fully than now, in the presence of God, and our position will be exalted. And the final one is praise. I might kind of add on peace to this. Praise and peace, is it talks about when I have, you know, David's saying, I then will offer up sacrifices of praise. I will shout for joy. If you realize our opportunity to come, even in worshiping through song and other expressions, is a gift from God of being in his presence, it's a blessing that we get to offer up praise and adoration, to sing shouts of joy to our one. I often take that for granted, but it's a gift. It's a blessing that I can, with my mouth, with my actions, with my life, offer up sacrifices of praise. So those are just a few that came to my mind. The permanence of that, the protection of his presence, the position, and the praise and peace. The third thing that I see here that David communicates to us through this passage is David was committed to prayer. He not only had a confidence in God and a desire for God's presence, David was committed to prayer. And I'll be real transparent. This is a hard one for me. I am not a great prayer person. It goes back to that. Well, let me just see if I can get it figured out. And if I don't, then I'll go to God. Let me give it my best shot and I'll work hard. And if that all, you know, if all else fails, then I'll go to prayer. And it's so backwards, right? It's so messed up. And yet it's so easy to fall into that. Is I want to be a person like that runs the Lord in prayer. That is committed to saying, okay, first God, what do you have for me? And I have not done that perfectly in this process. I have still tried to finagle and work my way and think, if I tried this, and let me talk to Sarah about all this stuff. I want to run to Jesus and say, okay, I'm at your mercy. I want to seek you first. And in the first few verses of that section, in verses 7 through 10, we see that David begins with seeking a faithful God. He could have confidence in God because God had been faithful. So he begins by appealing to God, recognizing, hey, I'm seeking after you. I could be seeking after other things, and some of us have tried seeking after other things, but I'm seeking after you, God, because you and you alone have been faithful. And so that, I think that's so critical and key, is prayer aligns ourselves with God's heart for us. It takes us away from thinking about all the things that I think might be and could happen, and gets me to a place saying, okay, God, I want to seek after you. And David says, after your face. Turn your anger away from me. Protect me. I want to see you and hear from you and you alone. I know one of my struggles is I hear a lot of voices, not necessarily audibly, but other voices in my head that are competing for my attention. Could be the voices in my own head, from the evil one, from people around me, all kinds. I want to make sure that my heart is aligned with God's heart and I'm hearing his voice stronger than anyone else's. And a commitment to prayer begins to identify with God and really just communicate to him what he already knows, but I'm aligning my heart with his. Secondly, David models a believing prayer for guidance. Not only does he begin by putting his heart in the right place of saying, God, I seek after you, he then models for us a prayer for those of us who know Jesus Christ. And I know there are some here that may not know Jesus. that part of your waiting game right now is you're waiting on the Lord in a big picture sense of saying, you know what? Things with God haven't worked out so well for me. And I'm not sure if he is trustworthy, John. That's great. Then in the midst of your stuff, he's been trustworthy for you. But again, remember, I've had my panic moments. One of my greatest fears in my process of this journey is that I will hijack this process by panicking and settling for God's second best and missing out the best that God has for me if I had just waited. I remember reading a story a little while ago, I don't know why this prompted in my head, of a guy that was out in the gold rush searching after gold years and years and years and years, and he stopped, finally sold it all, he lost everything, somebody bought it. He was 6 feet away from striking gold. This guy picked it up, and I do not want to miss it by 6 feet. And part of my prayer and following after this and submitting myself, because David says, teach me your ways, God. You know what that is? That's a heart of submission. I don't have it all figured out. I need help figuring it out. God, I need to align my heart with yours. And he prays for protection again. Those are appropriate things for us to pray for. God, I seek with you. Turn away your anger. Turn away those things that I deserve. Help me to hear from you and you alone. And then teach me. Let me sit at your feet in your presence and show me what you have for me. As a church body, this is a season for that. This is a season to be reminded of your confidence in God. This is a season to draw near into the presence of God and together collectively to lean on each other, to one another each other. And it's a season to pray. And I know you are, to be praying for God's clear direction. He's led you to this place. Why in the world would he leave you here, right? Thought of that in my life so often. I'm thinking, oh, how's this going to work out? What is God going to do? And I'm thinking, well, wait a minute. He's been faithful for all the years leading up to this and many years before that. Like, why would I think that all of a sudden, well, this is a good time to let John down. This is a good time to go, you know what? That's enough. I've given you everything I could. You're on your own, right? He doesn't work that way. He continues to work things out for my good and for his glory. And that passage, that it ends with verse 13, I believe that I will see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. Another translation says, I am confident, that same idea again. This isn't a belief of like, I hope it works out. It's no, I'm confident of this. I will see the goodness of the Lord. Sarah quotes that to me all the time when I get in those panic stages, right? Oh my word, I will see the goodness of the Lord. I am confident like David that what God has started, what God is doing, he will complete, he will finish. And I am confident for you as a church body as well. The final point there is David's encouragement for us to be patient. Patience. Man, I don't like that. Why can't he encourage us to hurry up and go figure it out for ourselves, right? No, he says, be patient. And I'm so glad he does. David had to experience many times of growing in his patience as well. He had a lot of experience in it too, just like I have, just like I'm sure many of you have. And he ends with an encouragement. He says it twice. He wants to be real emphatic on this. Wait on the Lord. Take courage and wait on the Lord. That means wait. That means don't try to go do it all on your own, but wait for me to be the one to guide and direct. And why is patience so important? Because patience helps us transform our character. One of the greatest gifts of the last 3 years of the journey that I've been on and continue on is God is growing my character. He is chiseling away things. I have so far to go, but I'm beginning to, I think, be more at peace with myself, more comfortable with who God has created me to be, more aware of my sin, more quick to repent, quicker to try to resolve things, quicker to run to Jesus, less dependent upon me. Patience causes us to have our character transformed, and it allows us to be more dependent upon Jesus. Now, in the moment, neither of those are enjoyable, usually. Like chiseling, refining, character development, like that hurts. There's pain in that because you're stripping away things that have been there and deeply held feelings or emotions or practices. And dependency, I don't know about you, but I'm not overly fond of being dependent on things, all right? I don't like to. I kind of like to be dependent on myself. I don't want to be dependent on my wife or other people or on the Lord. And so to get to that place, God has had to draw me into that of going, no, this is a sweet place to be. This is a sweet place to be fully dependent upon him. I heard this on the radio. It's on the screen, and it just kind of stuck with me, and I looked it up. I don't know if it was on a picture somewhere, and it says, Joseph waited 13 years. Abraham waited 25 years. Moses waited 40. Jesus, 33. If God is making you wait, you are in good company. That really hit my heart. You know why? Because I thought, you know, it's been about a year, God. That feels like a long time. Like, I think my waiting time, I've learned. I think I've got most of it figured out. How about you show me the next step? And I was reminded of many and many more, right? Characters in the Bible, real life people who have lived along with many that I've known too, that have had to wait a lot longer than they thought. And I want to be at peace with that. I want to trust that even in the season of wandering and waiting, that God has good in that. And waiting is not it's not a passive thing. It's not a sit back and laissez-faire, and I'm just not going to do anything. I'm going to sit here, and God will just audibly tell me what to do. No, there's dependency and trust, and there's ministry, there's life, there's diving into his word, that's serving others. There's so much that happens. It's asking questions, it's wrestling. Don't get this idea that it's just sit back and do nothing. No, it's active. It's not passive. But it's not trying to manufacture things. It's not trying to ram myself through something or to settle for something when I know God is telling me something else. I think of Isaiah chapter 40. We know this, the familiarity of these verses. It says, even you shall be faint and weary, and young men will stumble and fall, get exhausted, but those who wait on the Lord, they'll mount up with wings like eagles. They will run and not be weary, they shall walk and not faint. I've always known that verse, but I've often missed the few verses before it. Isaiah says, have you not known, have you not heard, the Lord is the everlasting God, creator of the ends of the earth. He does not faint or grow weary. His understanding is unsearchable. He gives power to the faint, and to him who has no might, he increases strength. Now, our waiting is because we're waiting on a God who can renew us. It's not, well, I waited, I did my job, and now look what I've done. I did my due diligence, and now, no, it's because, have you not heard, have you not known that God? He is the one who will strengthen you. It's not anything that you do. It's because of what he has done for you and will continue to do in your life. And I've just held on to that because I find myself so often, I want to do more. I got to figure out more. As a church, we can feel it. What's going on? What's our next steps? Who's coming in? What's God going to do? Or individually in your lives, my encouragement to us is to wait. We will see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. Wait on the Lord. And that's my prayer for myself today. Pray for me, because I don't want to wait any more than you do on things. But I'm finding it to be a place of joy and comfort and contentment. And my prayer for Calvary Baptist Church is that you will wait on the Lord and that you will see with great confidence what God has before you. So God, I pray that for my friends here today. I'm thankful for this church more than they can possibly know and understand. This church has made an indelible mark on my life, and I would not be who I am today without it. Thank you for many who waited on me when I was a kid and a little tyrant and unruly, waited on me. Thank you for waiting on them. Thank you for being a God that is deliberate and purposeful and doesn't give us what we want. I think back, you know, I'm thinking David, I'm thinking Saul, and the Israelites. We want a king, and they settled for second best. Help us not settle for second best when you offer us the best if we will simply wait on you. And it's simple doesn't mean easy. It's challenging. It's difficult. There are tribulations and trials. It doesn't make sense. It's painful at times. But God, we want to trust you. And I pray that for my heart and for my friends here today. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.